Welcome to the Back Ass Words podcast. We are the Back Ass Words boys. I am Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our Colorado studio is Arden.
And I use he, him pronouns.
Tonight, guys, gals, and NB pals, Arden is going to be wrapping up our three and a half part series on the flying disc craze of 1947. And may I just say, I am so excited. This series has been everything I needed after the heaviness of JFK.
Yes. And
it's been so much fun. Arden's been melting my brain every week. I hope he's been melting your guys' brains too. And I can't wait to see how this story ends. But before we get into that, a huge shout out to our newest patron over on Patreon. And is my mom, Mama Houston. Thank you for signing up as a Manchurian candidate. We appreciate it so much.
Mama Houston. Your support means
the world to me. You're the best mom ever. Thanks.
She really is. And we love you. Thank you. And you folks can get perks like this too. If you sign up for our Patreon, we do have two tiers. We have a Manchurian candidate, $5 subscription, and then an honorary Back Ass Words Boy, $1 subscription. You get access to our Discord. You get a shout out on the main show on both tiers. And if you subscribe to the Manchurian candidate tier, you get an extra bonus episode every single week. We thought they were only going to be like 30 minutes a piece, but some of them have turned out to be like 2 hours of extra content a week.
Yeah.
And so we offer a lot of really cool stuff over there. The Wednesday phenomenon. Come join us.
It's so much fun over there. And we've got a huge backlog now too. So it's actually worth your money. Sign up. It's great.
Yes. And can I just say that before we get into the rest of tonight's outline, it is such an honor to be presenting to you, Professor Kyle. You taught me everything I know. You set up the basis for me to be where I am today, and I appreciate it so much.
It's been great to watch you fly, Daedalus.
It is crazy that I did an alien series. It's like I didn't even compute that it was happening until like part two, and I was like, three part series on aliens.
It's like watching your kid take their first steps. You know, they don't realize that they're walking until they're doing it. And then they're like, oh, it's great. It's so cute.
Thanks. Okay. So, folks, before we get into tonight's outline, I am going to list my sources for our finale of our Flying Disc Craze series. And, of course, every time you listen to this podcast, first stop on the research train is our good friend Wikipedia.
Because we stan Wikipedia on this motherfucking podcast.
And if you're in the position to do so, you could donate to Wikipedia. I'm sure that they would appreciate it. I use their pages on the 1947 flying disc craze and on the Twin Falls saucer hoax. All right. I also used sources from the saucers that time forgot.blogspot.com, which is the sickest name for a blogspot.com I've ever heard. I used an article on there entitled Captured Flying Saucers, Twin Falls, Idaho, July 11th, 1947 by Kurt Collins. I also went to ufxufo.com and their page entitled Twin Falls, Idaho, 1947. And I also went to one of our friends. I hope that they are a friend of the show, nicap.org. And I read their Ted Blocker biography page, which was super helpful, by the way. Professor Kyle is checking one of my sources. I hope it's not accidentally a Nazi source.
No, it's coming up as a dead web page. I just had never heard of UFX UFO.
That was the web address that I was on. So I don't know if it got deleted earlier today because it was telling me the truth.
And now it's not showing. Arden. Uh-huh.
Exclusive on the back ass.
They started listening. We talked about JFK. We flew too close to the sun. Oh no!
Shit! Fuck! 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 No! Not like this. Wait a minute! Wait!
But obviously, you guys, obviously, we are not scholars.
No, this intro is taking way too long,
and we're probably going to get some things wrong.
Oh my god!
Like how long to make an intro, and we are also not linguists. We are probably going to say some things wrong.
Oh my goodness. Yes, absolutely. I am still the teacher's aide. I am no professor when it comes to aliens. We are not ufologists. Please forgive me.
I have not paid my dues to NICAP yet.
Not yet. But shout out.
Yet. Now, hold on to your asses because things are about to get backwards. Finish up class, Arden.
When we left off last week, we had discussed an absolutely bonkers, batshit crazy story in the Rhodes UFO photographs, which allegedly captured pictures of an actual UAP in real time with a box camera, of all things.
Crazy.
Something else that we also know based off of last week's episode is that the government seems to have its quote-unquote finger on the pulse, if you will. Not only are they aware of all 800-plus sightings that were happening during this flying disc craze, but they are also investigating them, and some of them they investigated a lot more harder than they did their other investigations, like
the
Rhodes UFO photographs. And of course, as we all know by now, all of these sightings were predecessed by our boy Kenneth Arnold and his sighting, which we released its own episode on. We will be wrapping up our series on the flying disc craze of 1947 tonight, but there is one more chapter to this story that adds on to the craziness that is worth talking about, and that is the story of the Twin Falls incident, or hoax, depending on who you ask, Wikipedia. We're going to talk about how we feel about this story later, but for now, I'm going to tell you the story. On July 1st, Twin Falls Times News declared that flying saucers have invaded the Twin Falls region after a forest ranger and his companion reported seeing 8 to 10 discs flying in a V-shaped formation over Galena Summit, located in central Idaho. Okay. It's super early in the outline, but can I just say this really quick? Can I just say this really quick to you, my professor, my leader?
Yes.
This I'm having one of those moments where it's like, you can't write this. They all saw 9 objects, allegedly, most of them. We're going to talk about it. I'm sorry.
My God.
So these two guys who spotted these 8 to 10 V-shaped flying formation UAPs were marking timber about 3 miles south of Galena Summit when they reportedly heard a buzzing noise overhead and saw shining objects above them. One of the witnesses, Walter Nicholson, was quoted as saying, quote,
"It wasn't anything like an airplane."
The following day, on July 2nd, the press reported on a second sighting in Idaho. Mr. and Mrs. J.F. Muser were reportedly driving near Malta, Idaho, when they spotted a lone, quote-unquote, big ball of fire, which they claimed was about the size of the moon, only much brighter.
Going back to our Foo Fighter roots.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
A third sighting was reported on July 3rd. Railway foreman B.G. Tiffany contacted the Times News with a story of him and his crew having seen a fleet of 9 discs noiselessly, making no noise, flying in a V-shaped formation over Hollister, Idaho, a month prior. So they reported on July 3rd. It happened on June 3rd. Right.
Okay.
2 additional sightings were then reported in Idaho on July 4th. Twin Falls resident R.L. Dempsey reported seeing 2 discs over the city. 3 residents of Richfield, Idaho reported having seen 1 disc.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4 days. Sightings. Boom, 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 boom. On July 5th, a group of 60 people having a picnic reportedly witnessed 35 discs in the skies over Twin Falls, making it the largest number of the mystery devices reported anywhere in the nation, according to the local press, during this time.
Jesus. 35?
35 and 60 people reportedly witnessed 35 of them. We haven't even gotten to the Twin Falls incident hoax.
Okay. Okay. Let's go.
On July 7th, additional sightings were reported, with one report naming 3 14 to 15 year old boys as witnesses of one disc that was the size of a motor scooter wheel. Small. Not that big.
Well, I'm wondering, a motor scooter back then would be like a Vespa. So that'd be,
it's a small UAP.
Like a foot. Yeah. No, it's teensy.
So I don't know what that means.
That's interesting.
It's small in comparison to the fucking donuts that are shitting like lava bricks out of the sky.
Yeah, for sure.
The Twin Falls disc was not the first story of a recovered disc.
It was a recovered disc?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh. As listeners of this show well know by now, on July 8th, it was reported that Army personnel at Roswell had recovered a flying disc, right?
Right.
The following day, it was reported that the Roswell debris was an ordinary weather balloon, as we all know.
Disinformation!
On July 10th, United Press reported on a hoax saucer allegedly recovered in North Hollywood. So these, all of this to say that all of this stuff that's happening is not necessarily uncommon for the 1947 flying disc craze. They were finding a bunch of discs everywhere, right? And this, folks, leads us to July 11th, 1947, in Twin Falls, Idaho, when an alleged flying disc was recovered on someone's fucking lawn, Kyle. On
just
their
chillin'?
Front lawn. Uh-huh. The press...
Okay.
The press reported the recovery of a 30-inch or 76-centimeter disc from that front yard. Residents in the neighborhood reported hearing a thud around 2:30 in the morning, but they dismissed the noise as a passing truck or vehicle or something. Right?
Right.
At 8:20 a.m., a next-door neighbor walked out of their front door and reportedly discovered the disc and contacted the police. The flying disc was discovered by Mrs. Fred Easterbrook in the yard of her next-door neighbor, T.H. Thompson, in Twin Falls. Two narrow strips of turf on the Thompson lawn were torn up, allegedly and apparently, from when the disc had crashed into the earth, right? Mrs. Easterbrook reported it to the police, and both the military and the FBI participated in investigating this incident. Reoccurring characters from last episode, Kyle.
Yeah. Okay.
So, in response to this, multiple officers from Fort Douglas, Utah,
let's go,
flew in to Idaho to investigate. Authorities then very quickly clamped down a lid of secrecy pending the outcome of further investigation. They fucking closed this. They were like, boom, we're handling it. It's handled. It's done. Right?
Hey.
That same day, the FBI reported that the flying disc recovered in the front yard had been turned over to the Army. The same day. All right?
All right.
But let's talk about really quick what this thing looks like, Kyle. I have a picture for you coming up soon, but really quick, first, we are going to read this excerpt from the Deseret News, which is a Utah publication that's still going.
Yeah, let's go.
To give an idea to the audience of what this disc looks like. According to the Deseret News, which was one of the first people to report on this, they said, quote,
"The disc is described as being 30 inches in diameter and resembling the base of an old-fashioned chandelier. It has a dome-like bubble made of plexiglass on one side and steel dome-like bubble on the other. Inside the plastic dome are three silver-painted radio tubes with wires attached to what appears to be an electromagnetic coil on the outside.
The Independent Record, based out of Helena, Montana, also reported on this, further describing the disc, saying, quote,
"The object measured 30 and a half inches in diameter with a metal dome on one side and a plastic dome about 14 inches high on the opposite side, anchored in place by what appeared to be stove bolts. The gadget is gold painted on one side and silver, either stainless steel, aluminum, or tin on the other. It appeared to have been turned out by a machine."
Now, Kyle, on this next page in the document is the most famous picture of this alleged UAP that crashed in this front lawn, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would like for you to look at this picture and describe what you see when you look at this.
I mean, it looks like a little mini UFO. like your standard boilerplate UFO.
Yeah.
But it's like the size of this dude's torso. It's
right.
I don't know. It doesn't look like it would hold up very well to intergalactic travel.
Right.
I will say.
Right. And I mean, something that I will say is that, again, like Kyle just said, there is a man holding this object in this photo, and you can tell that it's not as big as him, right? It's not as wide as him or as tall as him. It does look metallic, and so they are correct in that. And there is like a bulb on this side. I can't really see the bulb on the side where he's holding it, right?
Mm-hmm. And there's like a bracket coming off of it.
It also kind of looks like he's holding some wires that are attached to it, but I can't tell if that's pieces in his clothes.
I mean, that could be the wires that are attached to the electromagnetic coil that are on the outside that was described. That
coil. Yeah.
I guess.
Exactly. And so all of this to say, not a very big object, but the thing that's interesting to me at this point in the story is that there are skid marks on the front lawn where it quote unquote crashed. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so also something that I want to point out while we're here, Kyle, is that toward the lower third of the photo, there's like a little like leg that's sticking out. Do you see that kind of welded?
Yeah.
And it looks like it's welded. That's for sure. There's no like perfect crease there. It looks like metal welded to metal. But there's like a little leg. I would imagine that that's supposed to be representative of landing gear is what I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Based on that.
I guess.
It could have also been something that was holding the bulb on the other side. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the part that kind of stands out the most from it, I think.
Yeah.
Because it literally looks like a bracket that you could go pick up at like Home Depot.
Yeah, like at Lowe's.
Yeah.
Just walking in, hey, do you have any brackets that I could weld to a frying pan? Oh. But something else that I will say before we move on from this picture is that the weird thing here, and I saw this in my research somewhere, I couldn't remember exactly, so I can't give credit to whatever article it was, but the weird thing here is that upon investigation, they didn't see anything on the UAP that indicated a discharge of energy to propel the UAP, right? There was no like trail or like rockets attached to it or explodes, like nothing of the sort, right? That electromagnetic coil was there, but it wasn't what was causing it to allegedly move in the air and then crash into the ground, right?
Or they couldn't understand,
right? It's so
the technology worked,
because the fourth dimensional beings were like, oh, let's make this three dimensional real quick, and it doesn't work like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. And here's the thing, Kyle, the military has shown up, and I bet you're all wondering what the government had to say on this issue, right?
It's a weather balloon.
Can you imagine? They just say the same shit again. It's funny because they did say the same shit. It's just not that same shit. The
right,
next
right.
day, Kyle, on July 12th, they called this a hoax. All right?
I mean...
and we're just walking right now. We're going to talk okay. about how we feel about everything at the end of the episode. I'm taking you on
I'll hold
journey.
My tongue. I'll hold allow, my tongue.
Allow your heart to journey with me, all right?
I will. I'll try.
The Army alleged that almost immediately after the discovery of the object, four teenage boys came forward within that 24-hour period to admit to making this UAP and then just simply throwing it on the Thompson's lawn.
Okay.
With this allegation, they released pictures of the flying saucer, the one that Kyle just looked at and described to us. According to the Boston Post, quote,
Assistant Police Chief L.D. McCracken said four juveniles had admitted making a metallic disc found this morning in the yard of Miss T.H. Thompson of Twin Falls. McCracken said that he was tipped that one of the boys knew about the case. The boys explained it took them 2 days to make the saucer, which resembled band symbols placed together and with frosted plexiglass dome. The object was gold on one side and silver on the other.
So a pretty hefty allegation here, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And to speak on that, like the throwaway attitude that the government had towards this almost immediately started the government conspiracy theories, as these things often do.
Yeah.
There was one article published in the Idaho Times News on July 15th that particularly called out this conspiracy. We aren't going to read the whole article, although I highly recommend that you do. We are going to read a pretty sizable chunk of it. So here you go. The Idaho Times News, which, you know, was launching this whole thing off at the beginning, said, quote,
The flying disc hoax in the Twin Falls at least gave us an insight into the old cloak and dagger secrecy, which the U.S. Army on occasion employs to the extent of making itself ridiculous. Once Army intelligence got wind of the discovery in Twin Falls, it threw its censorship machinery into high gear. The police were ordered to keep the saucer under lock and key, and films of pictures already taken were commandeered. And to all questions regarding the disc, the officers maintained a sphinx-like silence. Not until the Army officials who flew here from Salt Lake City had started on their return trip was there any indication that the whole business was a hoax. That the saucer, according to their investigation, had been constructed and planted by four boys in their teens. But why did the Army officials take the fake disc back to Salt Lake City with them? Asked a local man. If it was a hoax, why didn't they put it on display here, where all of us could see it? There is only one conclusion. Either the Army doesn't know what these saucers are all about and is pretty much in a dither, or... It made a grandstand play of the Twin Falls incident to keep the public ignorant or confused, or both. Back in Salt Lake City, several days later, the brass, in true Army fashion, released a picture of the disc, which had been brought there from Twin Falls. In the arms of a captain, the hoax disc was made to appear as another triumph for the Army.
Who's to say that that's the same umbrella 15 years later, Kyle?
Boom.
Who is to say? God damn. I wish. I mean, you can find like absolutely fucking fire shit like that on the internet, but god damn. That was in a newspaper, bro.
Dude, for real?
You paid for that shit, dude. You paid to read that shit. My god.
I would have.
Now, Kyle, I know that I just absolutely fucking grand slammed this Idaho Falls incident, for the last couple pages, but I actually need you to hold on to how you're feeling. Okay. We're not going to do a check-in moment right here because I want to talk about it during the back-assward stance.
Okay.
So we're going to move into wrapping up the entire flying disc craze here, but we'll definitely be circling back to Twin Falls before this episode ends. Don't worry, Kyle, and don't worry the folks at home.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, folks, short of telling you every single sighting that happened during this roughly 6-week period, there aren't any other major mind-blowing stories to tell you from this time period. Now, that is not to downplay any of the sightings that occurred during this time. It's just to say that in terms of UFO lore in the United States of America, it doesn't add more to the story. It does increase the validity of UFOs in terms of how many fucking sightings there were.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it.
Right.
So we're not going to tell all.
While you're talking about that, and we can cut this out, I just found on Wikipedia, they have a table of all of the reports.
Yep. And
it is
so
long.
It is so long.
It is like stunning. And every single one of them has a source.
Yeah. And I actually referenced that list in the part one in the Maury Island episode of this series. And so again, highly, highly recommend it. It was so helpful during my research. So after Twin Falls, the sightings all across the country tapered off. And it seemed like nobody was really talking about it anymore. Ted Blocker, who went on to be one of the founding members of Civilian Saucer Intelligence in 1952, and who also went on to join and write for NICAP, described this tapering off as, quote,
"With scarcely more than a dozen sightings for July 10th, the UFO wave of 1947 had almost completely subsided. Few, if any, of the reports were carried by the wire services. While interest was high at the time of the sightings, it died out not long after."
Another scholar from Iowa named Emil Earl Wenegren commented on the brevity of the flying disc craze, writing, quote,
"The first newspaper accounts preceded a sweep of confirmative stories, some credible, some doubtful, some proven hoaxes, and innumerable explanations, that caught the nation's attention in a matter of days, and the world inside of 3 weeks. Yet a hypothetical person not in contact with a medium of communication during the incident and returning to read an American newspaper after July 20th of 1947 would know nothing of the episode which, shortly before, held the world in its grip. The episode was that short, that concentrated, and that volatile."
They were done. Like, the sighting stopped and nobody was talking about it anymore.
Yeah, just like hit a wall right at the end of the month there, yeah.
And it's like a week before, this was all anybody was talking about, you know? On August 19th of 1947, Gallup published a poll reporting that 90% of the public had heard about flying discs. Reports noted that this poll places the saucers on par with Orson Welles' Invasion from Mars at the time, the Loch Ness Monster, and Tom Thumb Golf. All things that were very, like, forward in the public consciousness, like Travis Kelce and fucking Taylor Swift at the fucking Super Bowl. This same Gallup survey showed that 29% of the public believed that the discs were illusions or imaginary. 33% did not know what the discs were, and 9% offered other interpretations, including linking the discs to atomic weapons or the end of the world. And this is where
at the time, more people admitted to not knowing what they were than thinking that they were hoaxes.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And we're going to talk about some of those explanations and theories as to why the flying disc craze of 1947 happened in all aspects of quote unquote, how this could have happened, both on the social level, the extraterrestrial level, the psychological level, blah, blah, blah. Initial speculation held that the discs might be technology developed by the Americans, us, the United States, or the Soviets, right? Because, of course, we just called it, we just dropped the term Cold War in April of this year. By June 29th, public speculation suggested that the reports might be attributed to the Flying Flapjack, which was an experimental Navy fighter aircraft with a somewhat disc-shaped body that had been profiled in the May 1947 issue of Mechanics Illustrated. Now, Kyle, I want you to look at this picture that I have in the document for you. This is of the Flying Flapjack, this plane that was made at one time by the United States government. Describe for me what you're seeing, how you're feeling.
You know, it looks like it's like you took the regular front end of a plane, right? If you looked at it just head on, you wouldn't be able to tell anything's different. But then it's like they just continued all the lines back into a semicircle and then duct taped some wings onto it. But for I'm real. Already going to throw up a something in defense of this being bullshit.
Okay.
They made two of them.
Yes.
There was only ever two of them built.
Yes.
So how were people seeing 9 to 10 or 35 of them?
Uh-huh.
And it was canceled in March of 1947.
Indeed it was, Professor. You are exactly correct.
Is this in the outline?
Yes and no.
Okay, sorry.
No, it's okay. But, no, I'm glad that you said it.
So, like, it was already dead in the ground before any of these sightings were reported. So I'm going to put a big fat disinformation.
Disinformation. I completely agree. And the Navy immediately dismissed this suggestion, noting that at the time, only one prototype of the plane existed. And additionally, that it had never flown outside of Connecticut. So people were like, oh, yeah, it's this plane that the United States is developing. And the United States government was like, no, it's not. We only had one. That's crazy part, if nothing else.
Yeah, the fact that they were like, no.
No.
Because that would have been so much easier for them to be like,
yeah,
you got us.
Yeah. You got me. Hey, on July 3rd.
Order an extra, like, 15 of those real quick.
For real, dude.
I know we said we don't want any more, but can we just they don't even have to work. Just, like, real quick.
They don't even have to fly. We just need to take pictures of them, okay? We could do it just like the moon landing. Oh, well, I guess they hadn't gotten to that point yet. That's not fair. They hadn't gotten to that point yet. They weren't there. Beginning of the Cold War. Excuse me.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. Ooh. We haven't even gotten there yet.
No.
No, we have not.
We being humans.
Kyle.
I'm just kidding. No, we haven't been to the moon. I'm
leader.
Just kidding.
Dude, I hope you know that I'm going to go full conspiracy theorist against the moon until the end when we do our backhazard stand on the moon landing.
I'm so excited for that series.
Oh, that'll be two-parter. A great one. I hope that happens. Maybe we can find a way. Yeah. Anyway.
I think we could work that in pretty quick here. Yeah.
And then, on July 3rd, one of our favorite reoccurring characters reappears. Army Lieutenant General Nathan Twining, head of Air Material Command and commander of Wright Field, announced an investigation into the flying discs and informed the public that the Army Air Forces have nothing that would compare to the descriptions of the object. So once again, the government being like, this ain't us, pal.
I see him just like hair crazy. He hasn't slept. He's got a cigarette in his hand and he's just like, We got fucking nothing, dude.
and
somebody's got to look into this, please.
And here's something else that might add on to this. I don't know how much value this adds to the conversation or if I'm even going to be accurate, but it's like, if it's at the beginning of the Cold War, like, I guess I could kind of see the United States being like, no, we don't have anything, right? Because they don't want anything to be leaked to Russia at this point in time, or to the Soviet Union, I should say. And so maybe, but again, kind of to Kyle's point, to my professor, my leader's point earlier, it would have been so much easier for them to just be like, yeah. My bad. On July 6th, the International News Services interviewed race car builder Leo Benz, who speculated that the discs were the work of an inventor named George DeBay. On July 9th, the El Paso Times published an editorial calling on the army to admit that the discs were new United States technology. Others suggested.
So they flipped. They were like, wait, who put out that?
The El Paso Times.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, so the El Paso
Times. I thought you were saying the U.S. Army was like, hey, just kidding.
No. They were basically saying, like, tell us, you bastards, that this was you. And the United States government continued to refuse to do so. Others suggested that the discs were Russian weapons, akin to the incendiary balloons released by the Japanese to cross the Pacific and explode in the U.S. They thought it was something like that, right?
You know, right.
UAPs, flying objects in the sky. Also, a little bit of a callback. Do you remember that guy that we talked about an episode or two ago? Lieutenant Colonel Harold R. Turner, the guy who said that the flying discs were people seeing... that the flying discs were jet engines burning brightly in the sky. You remember that?
Yeah.
Well, he said that on June 29th, 1947, but he ended up revising his statement, updating his hypothesis from jet engines to meteors shooting across the sky.
I'm sure he did.
I'm sure that he did. Because, first of all, his first explanation didn't make any goddamn sense. And again... Yeah. To say what I said, if that's so obviously the answer, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I just know that? Because it's so common, right? But then he just changes it to meteors. He's like, nah, you're telling me that 800 people freaked the fuck out. You're telling me that 60 people saw 35 meteors at the same time.
At the same
time. You're joking. You're joking me, dude. No.
Well, and like, again, this is fresh out of World War II.
Yes.
Most adult men at this time would have seen lots of jet engines in the sky.
Correct. I'm so glad that you brought that up.
Under lots of different conditions.
Correct.
They would know the fucking difference.
Mm-hmm. Between a goddamn meteor... There's 60 people. That's got to be a mix of men and women and children, allegedly, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that all of those people, all of them, we're going to get into it. Furthermore, offering even more, muddying the waters even more than they already are, occultists during the time, like Mead Lane, claimed that the discs were of occult origin or quote unquote, in his words, etheric. Okay. Mead Lane claimed that he was in telepathic communication with quote unquote people in the saucers. Okay. He argued that, quote,
Namaste.
Oh, God.
It is possible for objects to pass from an etheric to a dense level of matter and will then appear to materialize. They will return to etheric conditions. These visitors are not excarnate humans, but are human beings living in their own world. They come with good intent. They have some idea of experimenting with Earth life.
I think you reading that quote is quite genuinely the scariest thing that's ever happened on this podcast. Excellent reading, by the way.
Thank you.
Does that make any sense to you, Kyle?
Yes.
See, like, because, like, the thing for me is, like, initially, like, if I'm grasping at straws here, I, again, connect this to, like, a Wednesday phenomena type of theory. This kind of, like, relationship between the fourth and the third dimension. That's the only way that I could qualify this type of explanation. And maybe that's because of my lack of knowledge, but I don't
know,
man.
No, it's not. To go on a little tangent here, it's kind of just taking that an extra step and adding spirituality or taking spirituality from it, I guess, and interpreting it through that lens, right? You and I tend to interpret these things through a more material lens, right? They are, it's a scientific, they are in a different dimension, right? But how is a different dimension really that different than a different ethereal plane that these creatures are existing on and coming to our plane and interacting with, right? It's kind of a you know, apples and oranges. It's like clementines and oranges, right? They're like, we're talking about the same fucking thing. We're just talking about it in very different ways and taking different things from it.
Right. And I guess to pick your brain about this a little bit, or to just ask a clarifying question, since I have you, Professor, does that kind of connect it more to like the supernatural then is kind of what I'm gathering from what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the new age spiritual UFO movement absolutely ties things like ghosts and possession and things like that into the overall UFO canon that they have built, right?
Right, right. And this is why, folks, Professor Kyle is the professor, okay? So with that interpretation from Mead Lane, the prior year, it had been reported that Mead Lane consulted a medium who relayed communications from a quote-unquote spaceship named Coretta that came to Earth from an unidentified planet.
Coretta is such a good name for a spaceship.
It is a really good name for
a spaceship. It's a halo-ass name for a spaceship, dude.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it hits. Mm-hmm. But he's saying that he was talking to the aliens a year before everybody was seeing the discs in the sky.
Interesting.
Interesting. And, of course, there are some people who look at this as more of a social or psychological phenomenon rather than a bunch of people, hundreds of people seeing UAPs, right?
Right.
The flying disc craze was once again compared to Scotland's Loch Ness Monster, the panic caused by Orson Welles' broadcast of War of the Worlds, and a sea monster panic caused by a U.S. Armed Forces radio hoax in Japan.
Wait, that might be an episode. This is going to be a Wednesday phenomenon for sure.
This is going
to
be.
I'm adding it to the list. I'm adding it. It's probably a Wednesday phenomenon, but I'm adding it.
Come on over to the Patreon, folks.
Oh, no, this is such a cool story. Okay, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Let's finish the one we're talking about.
So on July 3rd, the International News Service suggested a sociological component to this phenomena, arguing that Kenneth Arnold had broken the ice and induced trained observers to tell stories that they had hesitated to relate before in fear that nobody would believe them, right? And so we kind of talked about this at the beginning of the series, and we talk about this all the time with UFOs and with ghosts in particular as well, is like when one person comes forward and says, you know, I'm going to tell my story, then other people feel somewhat empowered and more comfortable telling their story, especially because Kenneth Arnold was the poster boy for the flying disc craze of 1947. So if anybody's getting heat, it's fucking him. So yeah. They're not necessarily taking the brunt end of that. There's still that social component, right? That we've talked about before, like your social credit. But I can totally see this happening. you know?
Yeah.
As early as July 5th, press featured speculation that the disc craze was a result of mass hysteria, like the War of the Worlds, right?
Right.
On July 9th, psychiatrist Edward Strecker described the discs as a result of pathological receptiveness. So Strecker argued that initial witnesses may have seen something, such as the glint of an airplane, while subsequent sightings were likely illusions brought on by the hysteria. Basically saying that because everybody was saying that they were seeing flying discs, people were then creating the images in their head when they looked up at the sky, like, oh, I too am seeing flying discs, because it's happening everywhere, right?
Right, right.
He further argued, Strecker, that the emotional state of many people had been overactive since the atomic bomb exploded in World War II, which is completely fucking fair, right?
Right.
Again, we talked about that at the beginning of the series. Like, World War II introduced a bunch of new technology. Things literally dropped out of the sky and killed millions of people and harmed millions of people in future generations after that. And so people have anxiety about what's in the air right now, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Winfred Overholser, a nationally renowned psychiatrist, described the reports as a national hysteria. On July 9th, again, it was reported that an Indianapolis woman was sent to a mental ward after she was discovered hacking holes in the sidewalk with a hatchet in effort to drive the saucers away, which is obviously an extreme circumstance. But again, this was described as a craze. It was oversaturated. This is all that anybody talked about for this time period. And we've talked about this before. Stuff like this can definitely break your brain.
Yeah.
When you were living in that reality, like kind of similar to an existential crisis that I've had over the course of this show.
Yes.
With Kyle introducing all of this alien stuff to me, if I can get on a little bit of a soapbox for a second, this shit can break your brain. When you are grappling with the reality around you, and you are starting to think that you understand what's going on, or you're starting to realize that you do not understand what is going on around you, that is horrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you kind of start to see the matrix a little bit, it can be scary. Not to get that conspiratorial, but you know.
Right.
it's a lot, and I can empathize with it for sure, but you know, same. That's also, like you said, definitely a very extreme reaction.
Correct. You know? Correct. This is an anomaly in this regard, right?
Yes.
The Pittsburgh Sun-Telegraph ran a headline telling readers, quote,
"If you're seeing these sources, call the psychiatrist. And quick!"
Which is kind of a dick move to do to this lady, but like, whatever. Yeah. This was published, so the Pittsburgh Sun-Telegraph published this after a Harvard professor proclaimed that the flying disc mystery was, quote,
"Not a problem for meteorologists or astronomers, but one for psychiatrists."
Right. So what was it? Was it aliens? Flying discs? The government? Russia? Jet engines? Meteors? Great horned owls? Sandhill cranes? Mothman? Was it our favorite cryptid, back-assword Kyle? Who knows?
Cut that out.
I love it. No, keep it in. Whether or not you believe in aliens or any of these sightings, there is no doubt that this is quite genuinely one of the most fascinating phenomenons that I think we've ever talked about on the show. And this occurred in the United States during 1947. Over 800 reports of people seeing flying discs specifically in the sky.
And I don't think we've said this over the course of the series. 800 is the low end. of the spectrum. Some sources say it's in the thousands.
Correct. And again, to support what you're saying, Kyle, these are only the sightings that were reported. Right? For about a month and a half, all that anyone could talk about were these flying discs in the sky. And like we said, they were reporting sightings left and right. And that... Oh, wait. You have something to say?
I was just going to say, and up and down.
You're right. And that, my little flying flapjacks, is our series on the flying disc craze of 1947. I did it!
Woo!
A series on aliens!
Oh my god! How do you feel? How does your brain feel?
You know, I can definitely see now how fun it is to research aliens, because
yeah,
it happened particularly with Rhodes, with the Rhodes UFO photographs. Once I got a taste of that story, I was like, I'm going all in. This is the mm-hmm. only thing that I care about right now. And it was so much fun to do that. And there is something really satisfying. I said this to Kyle before we started recording. Literally typing out an old newspaper article, there's something about that that is so satisfying to me. I don't mm-hmm. know why.
Makes me crave a cigarette, you know?
Yeah, dude. And like a black coffee with like the blandest ass donut, you know? Making my mouth dry, drink the coffee. My mouth is still dry. Smoke the cigarette. My mouth is still dry. God.
Oh my God. This has been such a crazy series. We say it on like almost every episode now. I love when I get the chance to get my brain melted, and you have consistently done it for 3 weeks in a row.
I'm glad.
Ufology is definitely a bug, and I'm glad that it bit you too.
Yeah,
because we are not done. It's not like we were building to the UFO craze of 1947 we still have so much to talk about.
So much to talk about.
We haven't even mentioned the fucking disclosure that happened last year, you know?
No.
Like, we've got such a long way to go. So we will be returning to aliens. We're going to take a little break for a bit. I've got a fun episode next week for us. And I'm wrapping up the show. We haven't even done our back ass word stance. Holy shit.
We got a couple things to talk about, Professor.
Yeah. Back ass word stance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we can kind of, I guess, go episode by episode. So let's talk about Twin Falls for a second.
Yes.
Or let's go backwards. Let's talk about Twin Falls for a second. While it's fresh on the brain. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much I buy it.
By what? What side of it are you not buying?
I think it might have been a hoax.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, why?
I think so too. I think so too. I'm just fucking with you. I think so too.
Why are we reporting all these tiny little UFOs?
Dude, that's the thing that gets me about it. The UAP is so goddamn tiny, dude.
It's itsy bitsy. Mm-hmm. Like, it would have to be teeny tiny little UFOs. Unless it was like some kind of drone.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no like circuitry or anything.
Well, and it's
there wasn't even like a power crystal, you know?
Yeah, not even
there
a power
was nothing.
There's no kyber crystal in the lightsaber. Like, what are we doing? No. You know? Like,
exactly.
And like, really what gets me is like that picture of it. Like, again, what do we talk about with alien sightings? Think about Rendlesham, right? Like, what happens when an alien sighting happens? Radiation, right? That man, allegedly, if this is an actual UAP from outer space, from actual.
Oh, he would be 90% cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like everyone in that town would be 90% cancer. You know what I
yeah.
mean?
Yeah.
And so there's also that aspect to it based off what I know in UFO lore, based off what Professor Kyle has taught me. Like, this is not consistent with other sightings of legitimate aliens that we talk about in a more legitimate sense on the show, right?
And, you know, it does make sense that over the course of this UFO flap with that many sightings, some of them are going to be hoaxes. Like,
absolutely. I am no stranger Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's be very clear about something, folks. I don't know if this needs to be said, but like me and Kyle, as much as we love aliens and as hyped up as we get and as fanatical as we get, we are no strangers to the fact that like some people are fucking lying, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are just seeing random shit and they're like, oh, like I get it. That's there. I know that. We know that.
Yeah. And, you know, the same thing goes for the, oh my God, the
Maury Island.
Maury Island. Yeah.
Yeah. Maury Island was fake.
It was fake as fuck.
Yeah.
But Rhodes?
Oh. Oh. Dude, and here's the thing, and I deliberately didn't put it in the series because we already did an episode on it, but Rhodes UFO photographs happens, and Roswell also fucking happens at the mm-hmm. same time,
mm-hmm.
which is, those two events alone is so significant to me to have happened in this time period when a bunch of, and Kenneth Arnold, dude. And I know that we had an episode on Kenneth Arnold too, but like Kenneth Arnold, I think he saw shit, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
For real.
Agreed.
Especially with all the supporting evidence, people saying nine discs over and over and over. I want to talk about that too. I know that this backassward stance is kind of going all over the place right now, but there's so much to talk about. What do you think, Professor, based off of your knowledge and also maybe just your thoughts? Is there any significance to seeing nine discs repeatedly over and over and over and over and over again?
Not like specifically, other than that it corroborates, you know, the same, possibly the same craft.
Right.
Or group of crafts interacting with mm-hmm. us. You know, maybe they came for an extended, backpacking through the USA type of situation, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what
they just graduated alien college and they're learning about themselves a little bit, you know?
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of what I'm like wondering is like, am I to assume, if I'm looking at this from like a MUFON, like, you know, NICAP perspective, like, is this the same group, tribe, pack, flock of aliens?
I don't
allegedly,
know.
Allegedly, maybe? Maybe, though? Is that a thing?
I think
thing?
That's a possibility. But, I mean, you know, to maybe take it a step back, if,
mm-hmm.
Say, the United States military
right.
were to go and run reconnaissance on, say, an alien planet, they would fly the same types of planes in the same types of formations. And people would see those, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're the same crafts and the same pilots, right?
Right.
And, you know, it's also the analogy I've heard used several times is it's like seeing the same model of car, right? You know, maybe
right.
in the fourth dimension, whatever they are using to access the third dimension, that technology manifests in the third dimension like nine crafts, right? And so this technology... It's just because you see a red 99 Toyota Corolla doesn't mean it's the same red 99 Toyota Corolla, right?
And it doesn't mean that it's the devil's Cadillac in American Fort Canyon, right?
No.
But like for real, right?
Yeah, exactly.
To support what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
I totally get what you're saying there, and I feel that. And I'm glad that you brought it back to that point, because that is a really interesting and I think like level-headed way to approach that, in the sense of like, you know, it might not be the same nine aliens or nine twofers of aliens or whatever it was, right? But it could be that they're all from somewhat the same origin, or at
they're
least
all Pleiadians, you know, or they're all from Serpo, you know, whatever.
It
like,
could be different aliens, but they're all passing through the fourth dimension or something like that, right? Which is why some of them had bulbs and some of them had donuts. I don't know.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Something.
I feel that. I really do. I like that. Okay. So Twin Falls, hoax. Maury Island, hoax. Rhodes UFO photographs? Dude.
Real.
Those are fucking real.
whether or not it's an alien craft, it's a UAP that for got sure. photographed. For sure.
It looks like a craft. And honestly, the only thing... The
and
only
it's not
thing...
a piece of goddamn tar paper.
Tar paper. From
going
Ohio.
Going Mach 8.
From Ohio. No. No, I'm sorry. You can't.
I just finished editing that and I'm still so mad. No.
I know. And I also feel like it's not, it does resemble the shape of the flying flapjack, but it's not the flying flapjack.
No, because the flying flapjack doesn't have a big old hole in the middle of it.
No, it doesn't. And also, it only flew in Connecticut, and that sighting happened in Washington State, right? Mm-hmm. And so, no.
Literally the other side of the country.
Uh-huh. So I think that Rhodes UFO is real. And you can listen to Roswell and Kenneth Arnold for those. Now, I'm wondering, because I deliberately put this in here because I think it's an interesting thing to talk about with stuff like this. Explanations to the phenomena other than the extraterrestrial, like flying discs, right? Kind of what right. we went through in this last section here. I, we don't need to hit every single one of them. I guess I'm just kind of wondering your thoughts on like the other explanations before we get to like, were there 800 alien sightings in 1947, right?
Right. Well, I mean, I've been pretty straightforward. We were just talking about it. Some of these were absolutely hoaxes, fake reports, pranks, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call them. But I mean, the fact alone that during the Cold War, because even though it had just been named the Cold War that year, doesn't mean we hadn't been in it for a couple of years, right? Those tensions started the second that the treaties that ended World War II were signed, you know?
Right.
And even before that. And so we were already very cautious about information getting out about our military apparatus. And so the fact that the United States military was like, nah, that ain't shit, dude. That's not ours. I don't know what the fuck that is. I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah.
And I think we have a new creature to blame all the time to add to the list of the Sandhill Crane and the Great Horned Owl. I think we now have the Flying Flapjack as well.
Yeah.
Because that's absolute bullshit.
Yeah. No.
It just wasn't.
No. I agree. I mean, I think what's interesting to talk about here when it comes to like the phenomenon aspect of this is obviously the number of sightings that occurred, right? There mm-hmm. were so many. And I guess that kind of just leads us into the back Ashford stance on the flying disc craze in totality because the number is so high.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Kyle? Like, were there allegedly hundreds, maybe tens of sightings of aliens? Yes. What do you make of this flying disc craze?
I think it absolutely makes sense in what we've kind of talked about in some of our past alien episodes. The fact that we had just split the atom is yes. so huge. That is such a big leap in technology.
And can I just say on this really quick, I always connect us splitting the atom to the Great Barrier Theory.
Yes.
Which, to briefly take you, to take our listeners through it, it's basically like an evolutionary step that you must complete in order to get to the next level of like progressing as a species, to get to like interdimensional travel, potentially, and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, it would be like if the tribe on West Sentinel Island suddenly started sending out radio waves, right? Like, that is such a huge leap in technology, and if anything is out there that could notice something like that, they would, and they would take notice of it.
Yes.
And so it makes just buckets of sense that in years... you know, which in the scale of the universe is a blink of an eye, years later, we're getting checked out, you know, like it makes sense.
For like a month straight, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm right there with you, Kyle. I agree with you 100%. I think it totally makes sense that during this time period specifically, that if extraterrestrials were going to check us out at any point in history, it probably would have happened around this time and after this time, quite honestly, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm right there with you. Now, when it comes to, again, the number of sightings, you know, I'm just going to take a crack at it, Professor. I'm going to take a crack at it. I think at least 100 to 150 people saw, I think, what is aliens visiting us, at least observing us, flying over, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the United States in particular, because, you know, we dropped the atom bomb as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
As well as split the atom.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what led to the atomic bomb. That's where I'm landing on that number, that 100 to 150 range, which is, can I say, a ton. That's a lot to happen in that time period. And I think that I'm being pretty generous and conservative at the same time.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I think that number is probably pretty close on. I would say somewhere in the realm of 100 to 200 people,
mm-hmm.
On the lower end of that spectrum, realistically, saw some weird shit going on that not even the United States government can explain. You know?
And again, I think something that lends credibility to that is a bunch of people seeing relatively the same number.
Mm-hmm.
And also, something that was crazy that we mentioned in this episode in the Twin Falls hoax is that
mm-hmm.
on a different day, which was not the Twin Falls hoax, 60 people saw 35 UAVs in the air. What?
That's crazy.
That's a Hopkinsville goblin-esque, like,
mm-hmm.
how do you get all these people to say that they saw that?
It's wild.
Even if you told them, I'm going to make the same point that we made in Hopkinsville. Even if you told them what to say, they would fuck that up. There's too mm-hmm. many people.
Mm-mm.
They would say something different.
Yeah.
According to this, according to my research, I guess, take it for what you will.
And like someone would have come forward and been like, nah, we made it up.
Nah, it was wrong. And the Wikipedia page would have been like, someone came forward and said the blah, blah, blah. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. That's fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. So I think we're 2 for 2 on this series overall.
Absolutely.
That, this UFO flap, while it had its hoaxes,
mm-hmm.
Had its truth.
Yes.
And that, I mean, specifically, the impact it had on how we interact with UFO sightings is really interesting.
Yes.
Because I think that's where a lot of the skepticism was really born. And I think,
yes,
you know, obviously this is where Project Grudge and Project Blue Book really spread their wings. And
yes,
organizations like NICAP and MUFON and all of them take their lessons from how Project Blue Book and Project Grudge and Project Sign all interacted with these and researched these.
Correct. I agree with you 100%.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you so much. It means so much to be able to do this. I'm so happy that I could be the annoying TA presenting to the class. It means so much. Thank you.
You can subscribe and review if you are enjoying the show. And if you think someone else will enjoy the show, please share it with them.
Because word of mouth is the best way to spread that the Backasswards podcast just brought back aliens and they did a series on it. And you know that the Backasswards podcast is your favorite podcast and your favorite alien podcast.
You can listen to our previous episodes for more. I would recommend our episode on, there's no way this is right, I'm going to recommend our episode on our series on Mothman, because the list says we've only plugged it once.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, Mothman is a perfect series to listen to after this series, because there's actually some stuff in this series that kind of ties to Mothman. I don't know. And we had Jackson Dayton on for those episodes. He was an amazing guest on the show.
Amazing.
He still makes music. You should go listen to it.
Yeah, he just put out some new stuff. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Highly recommend the Mothman episodes.
You can follow me at Arden on Twitter. I am at BackAssWordKyle. Arden is at Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on all of your favorite social medias. On Twitter, at BackAssWordsPod. Instagram, BackAssWordsPod. TikTok, BackAssPod. And on Facebook, just search the BackAssWords Podcast. We can also join us over on Patreon if you really, really want to. It would be so, so cool of you. You can support us at $1 a month and get access to our Discord and get a shout out on the main episode. Or what you really want to do is support us at $5 a month and become a Manchurian candidate to get access to our bonus show every week, the Wednesday Phenomena.
The Wednesday Phenomena.
The Wednesday Phenomena. It's so much fun.
Come on over.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we will see you next week, unless the smallest UFO ever crashes in your front yard. And it's the size of your torso and it kills your dog and you dump your dog over the side of the boat instead of, you know, taking it home and burying it or something like that so that you can stay safe.
Wow. You just connected two of the stories of the episode. That was great. And while you are not burying your dog in your backyard, just remember to get out your box camera for that piece of tar paper that's blowing in from Ohio at Mach 8 and capture a perfect 2 photos of it going Mach 8. So that you can stay weird. I just set Professor Kyle off again right at the end of the episode. That's so funny. We have to cue out. We have to let the music take us out, folks. Please stay safe.
The danger
stay here.
Is real, my friend. I'll see you next week.
Yeah, Huck looks very handsome in his blue collar.
Mm-hmm. He's very, very dapper gentleman.
Blueberry. Huckle Blueberry.
Huckle Blueberry? I didn't even know he was gay.
Wait, what? Let me
Huckle
have my...
Blueberry?
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was gay.
Maybe this is my straight cis.
Blueberry.
Showing.
What? Okay, Barry, a blowjob. Like he blew him. So glad that Craig was here for that.
I have a feeling this will be used against me in a court of law.
It's incredible.
I'm such a fucking dumbass today.
Oh, that was so good.
What's happening? Couldn't figure out that the fucking short film was an allegory for depression or for addiction. Couldn't figure out the wordplay that Kyle was doing. I've been doing the show for fucking like 2 years with you and I still cannot fucking figure out. Well, like more
three.
Like 3 or 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah, over 3 now.
Over 3 years
on
at
the
this
calendar.
Point. And like, I still cannot fucking figure out your wordplay and your dad jokes sometimes. It's very disappointing. I'm sure that you're disappointed in me. And I think that you have every right to be.
I'm disappointed in myself, you know?
What?
It means
you
I need to make my
be.
Humor more accessible.
No, Kyle, it's not that. You need a more intelligent audience. Me, specifically.
Yeah, it's a
they
skill
just don't
issue.
Get you. They just don't get you, you know?
Right.